So that really taught me the value and importance of precision weapons. And of course, today, with Nate and his guys, that's what they do all the time. You know, they're all about using precision weapons and getting to the right place, getting the right target at the right time. In fact, I might make a little note about Nate. His father-in-law was a guy by the name of John Flanagan. John Flanagan was a dear friend of mine, an earlier 1962 graduate of the Air Force Academy who flew a tours in 01 and wrote a very spectacular book called Vietnam Above the Treetops, probably the finest 01-type book that I've ever seen or read. So.
All right, okay. Daryl, we got five, then we're going to turn it over to Nate. So go
okay,
ahead.
Okay, so give me my next slide, please. See what we got. Okay, there's an 01 in flight, and again, you can't quite see it, but the roundel on the side there would change constantly. And like I say, the South Vietnamese, the Thais, the Cambodians, the South Koreans, the Aussies, everybody was flying 01s over there during the war. Next slide. And this is a road cut. We went up there, the Ho Chi Minh Trail and all those roads that the North Vietnamese used. We would do everything we could to try to find the trucks in the open and destroy them, or in many cases just destroy the road to block them up, right? And we would go in there and we would pound these areas day after day after day and just create these big mud holes. A lot of it was very ineffective, though, and I learned something very, very simple truth in doing all that. It's very, very hard to destroy a dirt road. Think about that. Yeah, and we tried. We dropped 2 million tons of bombs on Laos during the war. Okay, here's a picture looking out of my wing. There's an A-7 right in the middle of that, camouflaged. Very difficult at times to see. And we had a lot of trouble working the Air Force A-7s in part because of that. And there's another long story there I wish I could tell you. But this is what it looked like working up over the Plain of Jars. You can see the road there a little bit. And that was our playground. Next slide, please. There we go. Here, what you're looking at, we're taking in a group of commando forces, guerrilla types. We're going to insert them along various hide sites along the Ho Chi Minh Trail. We're carrying them in with helicopters there. We did a lot of that. A lot of my primary missions were capping those guys. I would fly above with airstrikes ready to go, and I'm the command and control node that can bring it all together if necessary. Next slide. Okay, here we go. Go back one. Okay, here we go. Classic search and rescue operation. We have, in this case, this is a portrait that was painted a few years ago of USA-1. It has the belly land on the Plain of Jars there. You can see some of the jars actually over on the right side there. In to rescue him, we have an Air America helicopter comes in. His call sign was Hotel 16, and you can see that on the tail. And up above in the right corner, we've got a Laotian T-28 there firing rockets at the bad guys. And in the background, you can't quite see it, but there's a Raven up top maestroing this entire operation. And that was something that we did with some regularity. Next slide. The F-4. We worked a lot of F-4s while we were over there. This is one of our primary support aircraft. This particular aircraft is carrying 12 Mark 82s. The ones on the outside have the daisy cutters, and I see over here on this A1, see? Those bombs that he's got with the fuses sticking out, those are daisy cutters designed so that when the bomb would hit the ground, it would go off and give you a larger frag pattern instead of digging into the dirt and digging up a bunch of dust. Just something that we did. He also has, right under his intake there, he has an electronic jamming pod for SA-2 radar-controlled missiles. That was becoming a big threat in those days. Yeah. Next slide. Okay. Now, here's something I just found the other day. This is an improvisation. Somebody took an 01 there and turned it into a gunship by hanging an M60 out the left window. Okay. Go for it. I fired my rifle a few times out of the window. I don't know what for. But I don't know if I did. But some guys would do stuff like that. And here's another shot. Next slide, please. This is a Marine OE-1 landing aboard a carrier. And I guess the Marines did some of this kind of stuff at the beginning of the war. And more power to them if they can do that. That's great. And next slide. Okay. This is one of my Laotian pilots. This is Jong Li Tu. He's flying one of our airplanes. You can see the Laotian roundels on the side there. You can see the rockets on the wings. Zhang Li Tu was one of many Hmong and Laotians that we trained to fly airplanes. And when we'd bring these young guys in to go to our flight school, which was up in northern Thailand there, first thing was from what I understand, I wasn't part of this, but I've heard the briefings. The first thing they would do was teach them how to ride a bicycle, okay? Because they came from an animist background. They thought that electric lights were magic. You know, they were that far behind. I mean, after all, Laos was a country that was rushing headlong into the 17th century. Very primitive. And then they put them in cars, teach them how to drive cars, and then they would take them to the airplanes. And once they got it, they were damn fine pilots. And Zhang Li Tu was one of our main guys there. We checked him out as a T-28 flight lead, and he also served as a FAC himself. And this is my last photo here. This is me and him. He and I were very special friends, and after I left, about a year later, unfortunately, he was killed, shot down, because even though we came home from the war didn't stop, not even in Laos. And a year later, he was still fighting, and he was killed. And he's kind of a special guy, and I have to say, quite honestly, that the reason that I am here today is because of that man right there. Okay?
Thank you, Daryl. We'll open up to questions afterwards, but right now, and I won't give a long introduction at all, but what we've got is this youngster here, Nate Skopak, Colonel, current United States Air Force, Hurlbut Field. He's a group commander down there, been in special ops his entire career. I know he's got a lot of MC-130 time, gunships, and I got to be honest with you, I looked up some of the other airplanes that he flew. I saw the designations, and I looked, and I went, wow, I didn't know that we were flying those things. So he's going to kind of bring you up to date. He's got some slides, after which, hey, we're going to cut it off, and then we're going to open up for questions. So, Colonel, you got it.
Thanks, Ed. Thanks, gentlemen. Thank you for everything you've done. So the one thing that I took out of that presentation is humans are more important than hardware. I'll say that again. Humans are more important than hardware. And I'll let you in on a not-so-secret secret. That is the first Special Operations Force truth. There's five of them, but that's the first one. And the one thing that I will say is, so I've been in AFSOC, Air Force Special Operations Command, since 1999, deployed numerous times, both Afghanistan and Iraq, had the pleasure of commanding both at the squadron level and at the wing level in Afghanistan. And that is something that we have really inculcated in ourselves, as humans are more important than hardware. And it all came from the sacrifice and from the belief system that was set up by our forefathers in Vietnam. So if you can go to my first slide, please. All right, it's coming. It's not a black slide, I promise you. Okay, there we go. Great. So, as Daryl said, 1966, my stepfather, John Flanagan, was flying 01 bird dogs. That became my connection to the bird dog, and flew as a Project Delta FAC. He was there for about 8 months with Project Delta of his full year there. Project Delta was the precursor to some of the very elite Special Operations Forces we have today. So I kind of grew up hearing about that. And if you see in the middle lower picture, that's my academy roommate, Chris, John, and myself standing in front of an F-4. My roommate, Chris, was flying QF-4s at Tyndall at the time. John came up and was lucky enough to go get a flight with those guys, which was fantastic. Again, talk about a connection between the Vietnam War and the present day. And now, upper right-hand corner, that's John and his ROMAD. ROMAD was the radio operator, enlisted radio operator, which you can really think of as the predecessor to today's TACPs, who also are enlisted career field, who are running airstrikes and the JTACs. And in the lower right-hand corner, to show that bond, as we said, my stepfather passed away in 2012. The gentleman on the left in the Army uniform is Street St. Laurent. Street was one of the Project Delta team sergeants. So he came all the way up and presented my mom and me with a Project Delta flag, which up until last week I had hanging in my office. I actually just gave up command of my group last week. So that connection just goes all the way through the years, and it defines the kind of special operator I became, and I think it defines the kind of special operations force we have in the Air Force today. Next slide, please. Okay, so Iraq 03 to 2010. So this was my first taste of combat, okay? I missed the early push to Afghanistan, do some training, but I picked up right up on the backside of Iraq. And you can see my crew in the lower left-hand corner. I deployed about four or five different times to Iraq, so I had different crews each time. But the important part I want to show you is, and you look at a mixed crew here, these are great Americans who are ready to go sacrifice in a foreign country. That bond is the same, and it will always be the same. And that's the wonderful part about being America. It's me flying out on a mission. You see my NVGs there. It's end of a long night. We would always fly nights. And in fact, when I first started flying, we needed to get a waiver to land during the day coming into Iraq, basically because of the threat. So we'd fly all night long on NVGs, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, and then land at the end of a long night. And then go back to my slide, please. You can just leave it up. I want to show over top right, upper right hand corner. That's our chaplain, okay? And I'm not going to go in depth on that, but the fact that we provide a combat chaplain to our special operations forces and to all of our American forces, I think is important because there is a spiritual part of combat. And, you know, combat is definitely the point where you realize where the rubber meets the road.